Welcome to Puentes a la Comunidad, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition is New Mexico State University anthropology professor emerita, author, and activist, Dr. Christine Eber, to talk to us about her new novel, When a Woman Rises. Thank you for joining me on Puentes.
Thank you, Emily. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. Well, the book will be released on September 10th, published by Cinco Puntos Press in El Paso. Let's talk about what inspired you to write the book.
I wrote a book with my comadre Margarita Perez Perez, who I had lived with when I was in Chiapas, about her life. And when we were recording and transcribing her stories, I realized how much we couldn't include in the book, that I still could put some into something else. And eventually I retired after publishing the book with my comadre and had time to work with that material. And it became material that I thought belonged in a novel, that I could explore my hunches about what my comadre had shared with me, and also use my imagination and my knowledge of her life and the lives of other women.
And you've known her for how long?
Well, it's been almost over 30 years now.
And the title of the book came from?
I was in the town of San Cristobal, and I went into a store that sells some of the products made by Zapatista cooperatives, and there was a little cloth, and it had a picture of a Zapatista woman, and it had the words, Cuando una mujer avanza, no hay hombre que retroceda. And I translated that as, when a woman rises, no man is left behind. And I thought that that was a wonderful sentiment that encapsulates for me the meaning of the woman's agenda in the Zapatista movement. And that's something I explore in the novel.
Now, the Zapatista movement, if you can explain a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, in the late 80s, the debt crisis was making life really hard for people, but they were organizing to defend their rights to the land. And through that evolved the Zapatista movement, which was a movement of indigenous people to ask, not just ask, but demand their rights as full citizens of the Mexican nation. And they had not been treated respectfully by the government. Their lands had been exploited and co-opted, and their labor also used for public works projects without fair remuneration. And so in many ways, the Zapatista movement opened the doors to a brighter future for indigenous people throughout Chiapas and Mexico.
Last year, you co-produced a documentary, Maya Faces in a Smoking Mirror. And this became a winner of the 2018 Best Feature-Length Documentary at the Las Cruces International Film Festival. So the book, When a Woman Rises, is that very similar to the documentary?
Not really. The documentary actually explores young Maya men and women and their experiences confronting globalization and trying to retain their identities as Mayas. The novel is really about the life stories of two women who are best friends, and it explores a great deal what happens in their mature years when they are struggling to reconcile the demands on them as kinswomen and community members and also members of the Zapatista movement. So I feel like it's been an opportunity for me to share information about women in the Zapatista movement that we haven't known much about. Most of the literature has focused on young women who have found in the Zapatista movement a way to assert their rights as women. But for the middle-aged women, there's some mixed feelings about that movement in that they honor their traditions greatly. And it's difficult sometimes to see life changing so fast and them not being able to carry on some of the important traditions that the ancestors gave them.
So for nearly 30 years, you've been visiting the people of Chiapas. How have you been able to relate to the lives of the indigenous women?
I think I attribute that to my field work as an anthropologist, because it has typically required us to live with people in their communities. And when you live with people, you share experiences, and you learn to about the rituals and the rules, kind of like a child learns from parents. And you develop an identification, actually, with the people, much like a child does. And that can lead to, I think, pretty deep understandings that can't come necessarily from being apart from the people or standing more objectively, looking at them and observing them. So I was able to internalize a lot of feelings that the women were experiencing. For example, I think you really know when you identify with people when you feel a visceral reaction when somebody breaks the rules. And I remember it's so important when you approach a house not to knock on the door. And one time a man came who was a mestizo and didn't know the traditions, and he knocked on the door, and I was inside, and I just immediately got a reaction, like, what is this person doing? You know, this isn't the way you're supposed to approach a house, you know, in this Maya community. And so that's just an example of how I began to feel sort of the feelings that people would have about how important the traditions are and how important it is to respect each other. When I began to develop friendships with the women, then my work also took on another turn in that I wanted to carry on these friendships and be able to reciprocate with them. They'd done so much for me to teach me so much about their culture and their language. And I asked my comadre, Margarita, what I could do to give something back to the people. So they gave me a cargo that I've been trying to figure out to this day, but it is to help them sell their textiles through fair trade markets here in the U.S. and to inform people here about their struggles for social justice. And the fact that I returned every year, since I first went there in the mid-80s, that has made the difference. I haven't been able to live there because I've had to work up here and I have family here, but I have returned, and they know that I didn't just come down there to get some data from them and go home and publish my books. I wanted to remain their friend and build bridges of understanding between them and people here. And that's why I wrote my novel as well. I hoped that I would be able to help people get close to the lives of these people by showing them in all of their complexities, you know, the nuances of what it is to be a woman, contradictions and the fluidity of life, how they change their minds and how they make mistakes, and just like us. And perhaps then people might not hold stereotypes like they have of Mexicans, possibly.
So how has this been important to our community in New Mexico? I understand you received recognition of your service to the people of New Mexico. You were chosen one of the 20 women to receive the 17th Annual Governor's Award for Outstanding New Mexico Women. So this has to do with being a co-founder of Weaving for Justice, a volunteer in assisting the Mayan women bringing their textiles through fair trade.
Yes, I think it's important to our community here because, as you know, we have many connections of kinship and economics and culture between Mexico and New Mexico. And yet we have at this time a real crisis on our border. And we have myths perpetuated by politicians that, you know, the people of Mexico are somehow not our equals or are violent or not worthy of becoming citizens of our country or participating in the economy or culture. And this is the furthest thing from the truth, of course, because so many of our Mexican neighbors are our equals, and they are struggling for a better life for their children the same way we are. And I think that people might see the indigenous people of Chiapas in a new way after reading my novel, in that they share their hopes and dreams in the novel, the women and the men, and that may encourage people to see them as more like themselves.
Christine, would you like to give us a brief summary of the book?
Sure. The novel begins on Day of the Dead in 2007 in a small Maya community in Chiapas. And at that day, Magdalena, one of the main characters, puts a chair out to welcome back the soul of her friend Lucia, who has disappeared now 10 years ago. And at the time, Veronica is watching her mother put the chair out and remembers when Lucia lived in their community and asked her mom to tell her about Lucia's life. Veronica has just gotten a job. She's 17 and is recording stories of women in her township. So her mom agrees to tell the story, and in the novel recounts the story of how the two girls became best friends, wanted to have different lives from their mother, to go on in school, to maybe even become a teacher. But over time and in the course of the novel, poverty and the rigid gender roles in their society make it difficult for them to realize their dreams. But they still have internal yearnings and strength, and then that combined with the Zapatista movement opens up opportunities for them, and they try to remain true to themselves. Now, Lucia does it through her work as a Zapatista leader and also as a healer, and Magdalena as a weaver and a community organizer. Meanwhile, Veronica is hearing all this about these two women and trying to reconcile the contradictions in her own life with those of her mom and Lucia.
So it's very much like what the women in Chiapas go through today.
It is, and yet I think that is something we don't know much about, and so I was hoping to share that with readers.
Would you like to read from your book something that I think you've selected that would help us understand what you feel?
This passage is where the two characters, Lucia and Magdalena, are young women, girls actually still, walking home from school. And Lucia has recently had a dream in which the Virgin Mary has told her that she should be a healer. And that meant going to her grandpa, who's a healer, and asking him to teach her how to heal. And they heal there through prayer and also herbs and other remedies. But prayer is the primary means of healing. So here we are in the woods after school, and Magdalena is telling what happened. Sometimes when Lucia and I walked home from school, we would veer off into the forest where the pitch pine trees grow. There Lucia would practice praying to cure me, even though I wasn't sick. I would lie down among the trees and pretend I was sick while Lucia collected pine boughs and laid them out on the ground near my head. My pine needle bed was soft. We didn't have any candles, incense, or rum, so Lucia substituted sticks for candles and pine cones for incense. Before she began to pray, I would look up at her face, which had smoothed out like a piece of cloth waiting for someone to embroider on it. When Lucia bowed her head and her hair fell over her face, I couldn't see her anymore, so I closed my eyes and waited for her to start praying. Her voice was low and slow when she began, but it didn't take long before her words got faster and hotter. "This is why I come, kneeling with my face to the ground, beneath your feet, my Lord, beneath your hands, my Lord, under your shadow, my Lord, Holy Mother Maria, Flowery Jesus Christ, my Lord. Look at me, my Lord, at your daughter. Send me your healing strength. Lower it to me. Come heal your daughter Magdalena for me." Sometimes I would doze off while Lucia was praying.
So this shows a lot of their strong beliefs.
Yes, prayer is one of the most important ways to communicate with the spiritual beings, including the Christian God, as well as the Maya deities. And throughout their history, Maya peoples have depended on that for beseeching good crops, for asking for good health. And in fact, some elders still pray three times a day in the fields when they're planting their corn. And people fast and pray to bring peace. It's interesting, when I was learning Tzotzil, I learned that there's one word in Tzotzil that covers three important English words, and that word is kop, which stands for word, prayer, and problem. So it became clear to me eventually that really prayer is one of the ways that you speak and you solve problems. And so it's extremely important, even today, in these communities.
So for a better understanding of the Mayan people of Chiapas, especially the women, with your new novel, When a Woman Rises, which will be published by Cinco Puntos Press in El Paso, and also there'll be a book launch at Casa Camino Real Bookstore on Friday, September the 28th, from 6 to 8 p.m. In addition, they'll be selling weavings from various Mayan women's collectives from Chiapas.
Yes, and we'll have a cake and all kinds of fun activities. So I'll be reading at 7 o'clock a little bit more from the novel.
And also to find out more information, you have a website as well, www.christineeber.com, and also a website for Weaving for Justice.
www.weaving-for-justice.org.
And thank you so much for coming down and talking to us and helping us understand a little bit more about your passion for visiting the people of Chiapas, and especially the new book entitled When a Woman Rises, a novel, not just an academic book, because you've written several books.
Yes, and I felt like with this novel, as I mentioned to you, I could explore some of the material that I hadn't been able to in my academic work. So I hope that actually this will bring people closer to the people's lives than my other work has.
Thank you so much, Dr. Christine Eber, author, NMSU anthropology professor emerita, and activist.
Thank you, Emily.
You're welcome. For KRWG Public Media, I'm Emily Guerra.